The Rugby Union Podcast.
Welcome to William Hill's Rugby Union Podcast. I'm Michael Casey and I'm looking forward to week two of this year's Autumn Internationals. We've got some huge international fixtures in store and I'm delighted to say that joining me on the line to preview all the action is former England scrum pushing sensation, Jeff Probyn. Jeff, mixed results for the home nations last year, I guess depending on which side of the Irish Sea you're on, but some pretty sensational action.
Yeah, and surprisingly, I said that I thought that South Africa would beat Ireland because of the first game out without Bod, but and also the fact they'd come off of that win in the championship against New Zealand. But no, Ireland prove well worth their fanciers who thought they were a great side, and they proved it. They've moved on, and Paul O'Connell deserves a lot of credit as captain. He did a marvellous job, and they really did well. South Africa made a lot of mistakes, it's got to be said, which they'll aim to improve against England, but it was a great result for Ireland. England, I think we were a bit lucky. I think the 10 points that I'd suggested last week would have been there had it not been for Nigel Owens giving that penalty try right at the death.
I mean, you're well-versed to talk about these issues, Jeff. Obviously, it's your former domain. What do you think? Do you think it was maybe a little bit harsh for the All Blacks, or do you think it deserved
it? Well, I think if I'm totally honest, I think that Owens was basically paying back England for the Cudden try. Aaron Cudden, when he went over his try, the replay seems to show that he didn't actually ground the ball. Owens gave the try, didn't refer to the TMO, and after that he changed his game a little bit, certainly helped England with a few penalties, and I think realistically the penalty try, everyone knew it was the last play of the game. Realistically, I think he was paying England a huge favour.
He wasn't on our 10 points winning margin bet, was he, Jet, unfortunately?
if he'd been betting on our 10 points, he would have kept. But, in reality, I think the England team played well. I think there was there were lots of promise from some of the new guys who are in the squad who are playing again this week. I'm surprised that Courtney Laws has got back. If he did have a slight concussion last week, it's usually a 3-week layoff, but he's back in the lineup for this game against South Africa. I thought that Cruz played well when he came on the field. He put in some very good line-out play. I think England's line-out was superb against New Zealand, put them under pressure. I was surprised at our running attacking game not really being that good, to be honest.
Perhaps with the exception of one moment of brilliance from a certain Gloucester winger.
Johnny May. But then, that was purely individual. That wasn't a planned attack. That was Johnny May showing what he could do and really showing his pace. And very, very exciting. Very early in the game. Should have capitalised on it. We didn't.
Yeah, perhaps. We will get stuck into this weekend's game then, and we'll go through the games chronologically. First of all, I want to touch on an Italy-Argentina game. Now, listeners, it's been come through at the time of recording that this game may well be scheduled to be rearranged to a Friday evening fixture due to tempestuous weather conditions in the area. So we'll just keep an eye on that, but Italy are the home side, and they've made just one change to the starting lineup that beat Samoa last week, and that is prop Martin Castrogiovanni, obviously a player we know very well on these shores from his time with Leicester Tigers, now with Toulon. With regards to the betting, Jeff, Argentina are slight favourites to win this one, despite playing out an exciting game up north of the border, but losing out to Scotland. It's Italy 13-10. Argentina 8-13, and the handicap's 3 points either way. So we'll talk about this one rather quickly because not quite sure when it's going to be taking place.
Well, I think, in all honesty, that's a bit of a disservice to Italy. Beating Samoa was a great result for Italy, and them and Argentina are roughly about the same level. And, of course, the big advantage is that Italy are playing at home. Personally, I put this down as a narrow win for Italy rather than the other way around.
Yeah, 13-10, so the value's there, certainly. To be had. I've seen a little bit of various player interviews that there's been a bit of a regression about Argentina. Obviously, back in 2007, it looked like they were kind of stepped to become one of the major forces. International rugby, of course, joined the rugby championship, and just not quite kicked on ever since, Jeff.
Well, it's taken a little bit out of them. They still lose a lot of players over here to Europe, and they have a lot of players playing all over the world, and that does impact on their international team because they're not playing together often enough. And you know, it's only when there's really special tours, and to a certain degree, this is a special tour because it's coming so close to the World Cup, that they actually get their players together. So it's still very much an experimental Argentinian team, whereas the Italians have that that constant competition. They play in the Six Nations every year. Everyone's always there. They're always competing. We've got Castro Giovanni back in the side, you know, showing his perennial age. He'll probably last through the World Cup and then retire. But the Italians have started to play better rugby since they've been taken over by their coach, the new coach who took over from Mallet, who was the ex-Perpignan Frenchman, who I can't remember his name. It's got lost in the ether. But he's changed the way that the Italians are playing, and he's brought their back play into a bit more. And we're seeing a lot more of the Italians playing exciting rugby, and it's not always a foregone conclusion that they will be the wooden spoonists come the end of the Six Nations. They're slightly more along the ladder of playing in the top tier than Argentina, and that's one of the reasons why I favour them.
Yep, 13-10 seems a decent price for the Azzurri. Not a great record against Argentina, Jeff, but I think you made some very good points there. If that's the appetizer, we'll talk about what could well be the main course of the action this weekend, and we're back at HQ, back at Twickenham, and it's England versus South Africa. We mentioned briefly, obviously, the two games that both these two sides were involved in last weekend. Both teams ended up on the wrong end of the scoreline. This weekend, England have priced up as favourites. England 8-11, South Africa 11-10. The handicap's 2 points either way. If we're looking at team news, the only change for England's starting 15 sees Anthony Watson, the Bath winger, come on in place of Samisa Rokodaguni, who injured his hip in his England debut last week. Otherwise, the starting 15 is unchanged. Interestingly, it's going to be the 50th cap for Danny Kerr at scrum half. Contrast that to the South African side, the Springbok side. They've made 5 changes. In the news this week, Henk Meyer insisted, you know, they weren't knee-jerk reactions to the defeat, but 5 changes. So they'll go Leroux, Peterson, Serfontaine, John de Villiers, Habana, Lamy, Reinach, Matawara, Strauss, Jan de Plies, Etzebeth, Matfield, Coetzee, Berger and Vermeulen. So a changed Springbok side. Hoping, I guess, well, wounded and hoping for a better result this weekend.
They are playing a different game as well. I mean, bringing Lamy in at fly half is a big change. He's much more the kicking fly half than the present incumbent who's much more of a running fly half. And so, in that sense, I think what Haney has done is he's looked at how England are defending with this rush defence, and sees that the chip over, something that the New Zealanders used quite a bit against England last week, as works with a rush defence and does create space for players to play in. So he's brought a man who's going to be more of a kicking, we're going to see more of a kicking game from the South Africans than probably we saw against Ireland last week. So I think they're going to use their forward power, play a very, very tight forward game, and kick for position. Got big, powerful runners. We know that. We know the way they play. And I think the bookies, as usual, have got it about right. I think England know how to play against South Africa. They're much more in tune with that sort of game than the game they faced against New Zealand. So I actually think that England are in with a good shot in this game. I think that maybe a slightly more generous on the points score. I think between a seven and ten margin in England's favour this week.
Okay, interesting then. So England -2, perhaps at 10-11, would fall into that bracket. Of course, the winning margin lines are there. England by 6-10 points is a pretty generous 5-1. You referenced the changes at half back for South Africa, well, at fly half at least. Lamy in for Andre Pollard, who, to be fair, had a pretty impressive rugby championship, but he was, you know, he was quite clearly the second best number 10 on the field last week. Johnny Sexton giving a bit of a masterclass. I want to talk about one player who did have a very good afternoon, I thought, last week in Dublin. That was Willie Leroux. He's nominated for as released today, the IRB Player of the Year, and he'll be a real threat for England and England's back three to deal with. Just looking at threats and potential try scores, we're not live with these markets yet. They will pop up in the next couple of days, so keep an eye out for the price on these. But who would you be looking at as potential try scores? I think I'll flag up Leroux as one for the Springboks. Obviously for England, Mike Brown with an impressive international try scoring pedigree, Johnny May on the back of an outstanding effort last week, or perhaps Anthony Watson, who is a very exciting talent. I can remember watching his highlights video at about the age of 17 and thinking this could be one kid to watch.
Well, we know he's a kid to watch, but he's playing his second ever international, and he's playing against, you know, two of the most experienced wingers in world rugby, in Peterson and Habana. So
yeah, welcome to international rugby.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be challenging for him. He's got a lot of pace, he's a lot of skill. I think he'll be a bit like Rocker Gagouni, or Rocky as we like to call him. It's easier. A bit like him. We didn't really see the best of him last week. It was a very tight game. His introduction to international rugby, didn't really see him get the ball very much, and we didn't see much from him. Johnny May, on the other hand, got his opportunity, took his opportunity really well early in the game, but then we didn't see much of him again. So it will depend on how much ball we get. But, you know, you've got to look at Brown from the English side, obviously. You have got to look at May again. He's had that experience now. He understands a little bit more about that game. He also comes off his wing very, very well. So he looks for that inside space coming off of the centre players. England have stuck with the same centre pairing. Eastman starting again with Barrett again. Eastman didn't do anything wrong, but there wasn't a lot of flair in England's midfield. We need to see a bit of flair this week, certainly against the South Africans, who will be very, very strong, very big hitters. As you said, you know, when you talk about Leroux, he is an outstanding player. From fullback and a great attacking runner, which is one of the reasons why he's there. Him and Brown are very, very complementary of each other. They play the same sort of game. If England kick as loose as they did last week, then South Africa will win, but I don't think they will. I think that England's back three defended fairly well last week. It was the kicking out of the hand that let them down. They've probably been practicing it this week. I expect England's forwards to match the South African forwards, something that even the Irish didn't manage last week, but I expect England forwards to match the South African forwards and us to win the game.
Very good. As England then minus 2 points available at 10 to 11. Go on, Jeff, I'll push you for one potential anytime try scorer, just one from the game. Who would you look at?
I'm biting my lip. I'm going to go for Jan de Villiers.
Jan de Villiers, okay. Prices will be popping up available about the try scorers very, very shortly. Moving on then, at the same time, we go to the Millennium Stadium and Wales. Once again, just come a cropper when they take on their Southern Hemisphere counterparts. Though you'd think they might have a little bit more joy on Saturday as they host Fiji. Wanganui's men are 1-25 for victory. It's 33-1 the draw and 9-1. Fiji. Now, I mean, how do you assess the performance of Wales last week? It was hard, wasn't it? Because they were good for a long time, Jeff.
Yeah, but they didn't put the points on the board. You know, you've got to put the points on the board when you have the chances. And, you know, to allow Israel Folau those two breaks and the superb break where he ran almost the length of the field.
I did feel for poor Reece Webb.
Well, you know, it's tough. I think Reece Pleason coming back in at the side may be a good move. He's played some very good rugby for Wales. He was booed last week, yes, but the reality is he's probably a more informed fly half than Bigger was, and may have made a difference in that game. I think that, you know, I'm disappointed because I expected Wales to actually win that one last week. They will win this one this week. There's no doubt about that. They've got Scott Williams back in the midfield now, playing with Jamie Roberts. So George North goes back to his wing where he's more comfortable and where he really believes he should be. So let's put George North down as my all-time try scorer.
Yeah, I think he could be running a few in, couldn't he, at the weekend?
I think he could.
To get any sort of value about these prices, about these games, then, Jeff, you need to be looking at the handicaps and beyond. Yeah. Wales are given a 24-point handicap. Fiji a 24-point head start for a 10-11 shot. Double result. Wales be leading at half-time and full-time's 1-7. Elsewhere, you can be looking at things like the alternative handicaps, but they only make things shorter, really. But the winning margin live is somewhere where you could perhaps seek out a bit of value. How many do you really think that... Because let's be honest, Wales are going to be wanting to lay to rest a couple of demons this weekend. How many do you think they could win it by?
Well, I think, you know, if you look at it, they've put on a very experienced side. Yes, they've dropped Sam Warburton and brought in Tuprik instead, but they've brought Geoffrey Jenkins back into the front row. You know, they've put a full side out against Fiji, so they want to make a statement. And, you know, arguably last week's game against France, Fiji scored a few points. It was only 40 points to France. France have as many attackers as Wales do, and the new boy Tommy Taylor ran in three tries. I expect if they get their heads up, Fiji may go down. I think... If the weather stays good, are they closing the roof? Do we know if they're closing the roof?
Not sure if anything's been said yet.
If they keep the roof closed and it's a reasonably dry pitch, I think Wales could make the 50.
Well, Wales to win it by 4-1 to 45 points is there at 14-1. Handicap betting then minus 24 about Wales there at 10-11. It should be... a bit of a four, Marty, you might imagine. So, expect a bit of a one-sided one there. Moving on to the late kickoff on Saturday then, and to Murrayfield, we've got Scotland taking on New Zealand, and two coaches who have adopted, well, very different tactics and probably viewing the game very differently. If you are looking at the New Zealand side, I think, well, there's two players that remain from the side that started, and there's 11 new players coming into the match day 23. I'll read out the starting lineup for the All Blacks now. They go with Ben Smith at fullback, Colin Slade, Malachi Fakitoa, Ryan Crotty, Charles Pitou, then halfbacks Dan Carter back in the side, outside TJ Perenara. Up front, they have a front row, Joe Moody, James Parsons and Charlie Faumuna. In the second row, they go with Dominic Bird and Jeremy Thrush. And it's a back row of Richie McCaw, Sam Kane and Victor Vito. So you wouldn't say it was weak, but it's certainly far changed from last weekend. Whereas Scotland, I don't believe, have made a single change. Vernon Cotter has stayed with the exact same 15 that defeated Argentina in what I thought was a very entertaining game last weekend.
Well, yeah, but international rugby, I hate to say this, isn't supposed to be entertaining. You know, for the yeah. Scots, they needed that win, and they needed, actually, for Argentina not to score as many points as they did. You know, the mere fact that, yes, Scotland won, it was 41-34, so it's a 7-point margin, something like that. Reality, if they're that porous for the Argentinians with this All Black side and with Dan Carter back for the All Blacks, we can expect to see some fireworks. Carter's not played for a long time because of a broken leg. This is his first real game back into it. They've wanted to give him some game time. Steve Hansen said that already. It's hard to see how Scotland can even compete in this game, to be honest with you. Scotland's rugby, yes, has grown in confidence with Cotter there, but the reality, I still see this as being a one-way street.
That's interesting. I agree. To ship 31 points to Argentina at home, maybe not the best defensive record when you're going to be facing the world's best side the following week, but I think the complete overhaul of personnel for the ABs, and I mean, you know, when you're bringing in Dan Carter into a side, you're never going to worsen it, certainly at half back. I just wonder if perhaps Scotland could maybe be competitive, even just a little bit in this game, because, Jeff, the handicap is 21 points this game. Scotland are 10-1 to win the game. New Zealand 1-33. It's a 10-11 each of two with a 21-point handicap. And I have to say, although I think you might disagree, I thought that Scotland may be able to stay within inside that 21-point gap.
Well, yeah, I think they could. I mean, there's no doubt that Scotland will have heart. They've got some great players. The Gray brothers are good players. It's good that Cotter's kept that team together. Stuart Hogg, as I've said last week, is a very, very good player. The reality is, though, is that this is the All Blacks, and the All Blacks don't produce a bad game. I expect that Scotland will lose, but I don't expect it to be that big margin you're talking about. I reckon 15 to 20 points would be maximum, absolute maximum.
So there you go, Scotland plus 20 on the handicap there at 10 to 11. We've got the winning margin lives available as well. Interestingly, the 16 to 20 points at 6-1, second favourite to New Zealand. This is New Zealand to win, of course. Mm. Second to New Zealand winning by 21 to 25, which is 5-1. I mean, you do look at the New Zealand.
I'd go for the 6-1. You know, I honestly think that you know, Scotland. I expect Scotland to lose. I expect them to lose more heavily than England did. But Scotland are a good side. They're awkward in the way they play. Cotter's brought confidence back to them. It's just that they don't have the strength and depth in players.
And, yeah,
you know, being able to name the same starting 15, which is what they've done. They've kept what Cotter believes is their best 15 on the field, and you know, barring injuries, that's got to play well for Scotland. And as I say, I think England were flattered a little bit last week by the 3-point loss. It should have been 10 points. Could have even been a little bit more had the goal kicking gone right for New Zealand. The one thing about this week is the goal kicking will go right for
certainly
New Zealand.
Will. And I mean, I suppose you're going to talk about strength and depth. If they're keeping it tight at 60 minutes, then all of a sudden on come Sonny Bill Williams, Julian Surveyor, Augustine Pulu. It could be slightly demoralising, but I'm going to keep faith, and I think you are in the Scots. Plus 21 points at 10-11. The very late game on Saturday sees what could arguably be the one of the closest fought games of the weekend. France versus Australia. Two sides who are thinking from a betting point of view are always quite complicated to put your thumb on because of the unpredictable nature of both sides. France are just outsiders for this one, even money, and Australia 4-5 the draw, which I know you're not averse to putting up a draw every now and then. 8-1 is 18-1 is there also. Australia, they'll start with Izzy Folau, of course, who scored twice last week. Adam Ashley Cooper, Tevita Kuridrani, Christian Leilifanu, Joe Tamani, Bernard Foley and Nick Pipps is the backline. Up front they go James Slipper, Siya Fainga, Sekopi Kepu, who makes his 50th cap, which is quite rare for Australian prop forwards, has to be said, to reach such a milestone. Rob Simmons and Sean McMahon in the second row, and a back row of Michael Hooper, Ben McCallum and Sean McMahon. Sorry, and yeah, James Horwell will be in the second row with Rob Simmons. There we go. Yeah. How much do you read into France's win last weekend? How much do you take into Australia's win over Wales, which they always seem to do, no matter how? Because we were right, and I completely agreed with you, writing Australia off going into that game with Wales on the back of a pretty disastrous rugby championship and a bit of a shambolic looking build up to the game, if you like.
Yeah, but they are Australian, and you know, in adversity they produce results. They've always done that. They've got that quality. But I just think that France will be a bit too strong for them. I think the win for France last week was a great morale boost for France after all the pressure that Saint André has been under. And yes, it was only Fiji, but they discovered some new talents. As I say, Tommy Trinder, three tries. You know, what a great guy! What a great find! Exciting pace, obviously a very very good finisher. You got Folau with them as Fofana rather with them as well, playing good rugby. And they've got a good set of forwards. I think that's where they'll take Australia. They'll take Australia up front, and I expect France to win by between 7 and 10 points. Mm.
Interesting. Teddy Thomas, as you mentioned, such a find for the French. He's become the second only Frenchman to score a hat trick on a debut after that 40-15 win. So he'll be interesting seeing him line up against the likes of Adam Ashley Cooper.
Yeah, I got to say though, Michael, one of the interesting things about it is, you know, we're talking about him and we're saying Trinder...
Thomas,
get me Thomas's and these things.
Henry Trinder thing.
Yeah. Thomas scoring the hat-trick. But the interesting thing is how he scored the hat-trick. The fact that the French are back moving the ball again, giving the opportunity for players to play. And yes, it's Fiji, so they're under slightly less pressure. But if France get into that style of play again, it brings all their historic skills to the fore. We've seen a lot of it in the Champions Cup this year where they've been playing. You've got to expect to see that if they're playing that way, it's going to challenge Australia in areas where they've not been challenged by any other team. And they certainly weren't challenged in those areas by Wales. So I think that France may be refining their form just at the right time.
Enigmatic fringe then. Even money to win this game on the outright. So if you fancy a bit of security, plus one on the handicap at 10 to 11 euros. Jeff suggests the winning margin. Did you say 6 to 10 points? Was it 1
yeah.
to 5?
6
to
yeah.
10, 5 to 6 to 1 for France about that. So perhaps see a bit of a... Australia being brought back down to earth, which would be nice. The final game of the weekend then, and this is, well, according to our William Hill traders at least, the most one-sided game of the weekend. We're not actually blessed with team news at this moment in time, but I think we could assume that Ireland will probably make a few changes from the side that beat South Africa as they take on Georgia, an emerging nation in the world, international rugby union world. But you would imagine this will be a bit of a step too far for a side who are making positive signs on the international scene, even if not in the top tier of competition, if you like.
Well, Georgia always produce some very, very good players. One of the reasons that Georgia plays rugby is actually because Stalin, for your history, Stalin liked rugby, and as a Georgian, decreed that Georgia would play rugby. And
that's in the UVA.
There you go. That's why they play rugby in Georgia. They do produce some great forwards, and you know, if you look at various teams around the Premiership and also the top 14, there are a number of Georgian players. So they have players who play in the elite top class game, but the reality is that they can't do it at international level. Not yet. They're not there yet. They're very much a tier two side. I think even if Ireland put out a second rate team, they'll still win this game. If they put out six, and if they put out a side similar to one they put out against South Africa, then this will be a big scoring game. I think Ireland may well put the same team out or a similar team out, simply just to reinforce where they are, to get to use this really more like a practice game than a real game for what lies ahead, rather than for what goes on this week. Sometimes you can change a side too much. Cotter's not done it with Scotland. To give a bit of continuity, it would be good for Ireland to also have a bit of continuity, so that, and I expect Schmidt will do the same, try and get that continuity so that he knows that his Irish team are playing well. There may be one or two changes, but I expect it to be very much similar to the side that face South Africa, and you can expect a 30-40 point margin in this.
Okay, the handicap there at 40 points, so perhaps the traders getting it right again. I mean, as you said, Georgia, they're tough enough side. Well, they made it tough for Tonga for long enough. They were 9-6 up on the hour mark before eventually falling by 23 points to 9, but obviously Tonga not quite in the same bracket as Ireland. So minus 40 points about Ireland, would that be a bet you'd rather have them plus 40 points than Georgia, Jeff?
I think I'd rather have the minus 40.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Well, interesting. If we look at the selections from the weekend, just kind of looking at the outright picks, if you're picking, starting with the first game, Italy to beat Argentina, England to beat South Africa, Wales to beat Fiji, New Zealand to beat Scotland, France to beat Australia, and Ireland to beat Georgia. So essentially going down the card with your picks, Jeff. You know, that's returning 7.5 to 1, which isn't a bad profit, is it? You know, put a 10 to win 75 there. I know, obviously, there's going to be a couple of tight games, particularly you think the England, South Africa, the France, Australia, and the Italy, Argentina one. But yeah, that's a decent odds.
Well, I think when you look at where we are, it's a second game in these autumn internationals. A couple of teams have got some easy games. I mean, Wales, obviously, relatively easy game. We've got to say that. Ireland, a relatively easy game. So we can see those ones. The others, I think the England showed enough last week to say that they're getting there. They're there or thereabouts. South Africa play a much more, how can I put this, pragmatic style of rugby that suits the way that England plays. New Zealand style of rugby, where they have that counter-attack move, where they do an awful lot of offloading, they take players on. England find that difficult to play with. They find the style that South Africa play much easier to play against, and you know, from that point of view, it's more ingrained in the style of the way that the Premiership plays. Gives England that little bit of that little bit of favourite for me that says that they will win at home at Twickenham. it's going to be a great game. I'm going as well, so I'm hoping that England win.
Well, look, I look forward to hearing all about it next week. Obviously, I'll be watching at home in front of my television set and the rest of the action to come. Jeff, thank you very much for talking to us and for your predictions. And fingers crossed, we've got a few right.
Yeah, I'm going to put a tenner on myself on that 7-1 one, that's for sure.
Brilliant.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.